Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Welcome in one and all to the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along with Travis Ryer on a Sunday nighter, recapping Alabama's game against Georgia in the SEC title game. Goes very bad for the Crimson Tide, 28-7, the final score the following day. Of course, here on Sunday, things turned out a little better for Alabama, as we learned that they will indeed be in the college football playoff, taking on Oklahoma in a first-round game and a bit of an upset. I think most folks probably had Alabama playing A&M as a 10 seed. As it turns out, they did not move an inch from their seeding from the previous week, despite the debacle of a performance against the Bulldogs at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We will get to all that. We'll talk about the CFP a little bit more on the back end, Travis, but here on the front end, let's tackle this. The elephant in the room is a 28-7 loss to Georgia that was uninspiring, to say the least.
Yeah, maybe the elephant wasn't in the room at Mercedes-Benz Stadium right. Saturday afternoon, because it kind of felt that way with the way the Georgia Bulldogs, cathartic, wasn't it? You were there, I'm sure, for the Georgia fan base and even Kirby. Cathartic, yeah. Probably described, not just beating Alabama and beating Alabama in the state of Georgia, beating Alabama, especially in that house of horrors for Georgia in matchups with Alabama in the past, but to do it in a manner in which Georgia did it, a dismantling, a take apart completely. So I'm sure for the Georgia fan base, it's one that going to continue to celebrate for the forthcoming days and maybe even weeks.
It looked like Georgia looked like Alabama of you know, circa 2012 to 2014, mm-hmm. right in that neighborhood. Let me qualify that. I don't think this Georgia team is anywhere as good as those Alabama teams, but they did take Alabama apart exactly the way those Alabama teams used to beat people. Won in all three phases, played better on offense, played better on defense, played better special teams, got the job done on the line of scrimmage, more physical. All those things, Travis. That's how Nick Saban did it in his Alabama prime.
Yeah, we talked about that on the channel, I think, last night. It was 14-0 at the half, but it felt like one of those Saban teams where it may have been 10 or 14-0, but it felt like 24 or 28. You know, There wasn't really a sense of hope, even though it was technically a 2-score game, and even when Alabama got it to 21-7. That felt more cosmetic in nature. It didn't really feel like, here comes Alabama going to make a run now. Mm-hmm. You know, put together a decent drive. Even Georgia on that drive helped with some penalties. But you do give Ty Simpson and the offense some credit for that. Ty hit some throws, had some balls that probably should have been caught before he hit Jeremy Bernard for the, the screen and the touchdown there. But, yeah, you're right. From start to finish, all three phases, This was all about Georgia.
Yeah, you point out the Bernard touchdown seemed a little hollow. And along those lines, I thought it was a pretty hollow comment from Kalen DeBoer post-game when he said, hey, guys, we were down 14 with the ball with 7.5 minutes to go. He said that. I'm thinking, yeah, that sounds like a pretty deep hole is what it sounds like.
Yeah,
I mean, well, when you haven't played well all night.
Yeah, that's what you're trying to sell to your team, you know. But I don't think they probably even bought that. I know the people watching either in attendance there in Atlanta or the millions watching on the broadcast, I don't think any of those folks were really buying it at that point. If anything, you were thinking, yeah, if you can somehow get this to even 21-14. And I said this at halftime of the game too, the best thing Alabama had going for it at halftime and looking ahead to the second half, especially with what was coming up on Sunday, is that like Nick Saban, Kirby's a guy that once he's got the game under control, he'll try to get it done and get out of there. Mm-hmm. Now, Georgia went on to score a couple more touchdowns, Kirby's fine with just running clock and winning 17-7, you know, or 17-3 or whatever it is. So that's also a bad thing, though, because Georgia and teams like that are able to control the game to an extent where you don't really feel like you have a great opportunity to get back in it.
No doubt about it. If you look at the team statistics, Travis, you really see some exposure here and where Georgia dominated. 141 net rushing yards for Georgia, -3 for Alabama. Let's start right there. We know the Alabama run game is not good, hadn't been good all year. It sprung to life a little bit in the Auburn game, but it took two steps backwards from that against Georgia. Could not get anything done. Longest rush of the game for Alabama was 5 yards, Travis.
Mm-hmm. That was the first play of the game. Yeah. I think that was the first play of the game. Daniel Hill picked up 5 yards on a zone run, and then I think he got 2 on 2nd and 5, and then they tried the eye candy handoff to Lottie Brooks that was miserable and had no chance from the start.
Yeah, that definitely did not work out there. And just Alabama could not move it at all on the ground. The whole thing on Ty Simpson once again, and Ty Simpson is not the quarterback he was midseason. He's just not, he's not as accurate. He was asked if he was hurt in the post game, and he didn't deny it. He said, well, we're all beat up. Well, that means I'm beat up. So, yeah. You know, I can't tell you precisely what's going on physically with Ty Simpson body part wise, but the eye test says he's not hitting guys right in the hands like he was for much of the season as Alabama was ripping through an 8-game win streak.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, what point in the season would you point to and say this is when it started to become problematic for Ty Simpson? I think a lot of people look at the Oklahoma game, but I've already talked about it here on the channel, so I want to get your thoughts on it. Where do you think this really started to rear its head for him?
I think you can make a case for South Carolina, but for me, it's a little bit more LSU. That game was a 20-9 game where Alabama was kind of up and down offensively against the Tigers at home. Mm-hmm. But you know, you can go back to South Carolina and Alabama was inconsistent offensively for 3 quarters of that game. What about you? Where do you think it started?
That's where I went when I talked about it. I went South Carolina. I think even the hit Dylan Stewart put on him in the pocket, it wasn't a sack. Simpson got the ball out. But if you go back and think about the shot he took from Dylan Stewart in Columbia, I don't know for certain. That's kind of – but I think that game, you know, is – and we had talked about it. I mean, the stakes were going to continue to go up and the defenses were going to get better and better. Mm-hmm. And LSU, for all its struggles, you knew was going to be a tough defense to go against. Oklahoma, you knew that was going to be the case. Even Auburn was going to present some major challenges. So certainly as you got into late October, early November, that's when this seemed to start to become more of an issue for him.
Fourth and short call deep in Alabama's own territory. Let's go situational for a minute, Travis. Late in the game, fourth quarter, Alabama decides to go for it on fourth down. I want to say from their own 12-yard line. A lot of criticism about the play call, throwing to the far side of the field, throwing field side, other side of the numbers. It was not the play call I would have made. I think you throw it short across the stick somehow, like they tried to do, I think, the previous play on third down and couldn't get that one done. But that's not an easy throw. And it's not a throw that Ty Simpson is hitting with a ton of consistency right now.
Maybe get him on the move, you know, get him outside the pocket and give him some run pass option out there, which takes us to the lack of really any design quarterback runs in the game. You know, we saw him against Auburn, but maybe as it was related to his health, they didn't want to expose him to that. Meanwhile, Georgia, which was in the college football playoff safely, regardless of the outcome Saturday afternoon, had no problem dialing up Gunnar Stockton on design quarterback runs. If you watch the approach of the two offenses and you didn't know, you probably would have thought, well, Georgia's the team right now that needs to win to get in or to solidify its status as a college football playoff team. Not so much with Alabama. You just have to respect Georgia and how much it values every inch of the football field, whether it's defense, whether it's offense. That is a team that gets it in terms of inches, feet, yards. Every one of them means something. And I thought that showed in kind of their hunger and how they went after it. They wanted to win an SEC championship. I'm sure there was some get back that they were looking for as it relates to Alabama, but it was a little bit, I wouldn't say stunning, but perhaps surprising that clearly the most hungry looking team and the team that had really done its due diligence throughout the week was a team that really didn't have as much to lose, you didn't think.
No, you didn't think so. Special teams, also a big factor as well. Of course, you had the block punt early that set up Georgia's first touchdown. Georgia also had a couple punts that pinned Alabama deep. I think at one of them, they were down to the eight. Then you had the punt to Cole Adams that he muffed toward the end of the game, jumped on that. I thought that was a ball that Adams probably shouldn't have fielded at all. But, you know, the block punt, Travis, was big. And I haven't rewatched the TV copy of the game yet. But Kalen DeBoer kind of pinned it on a substitution that they had to make with LT Overton being out. A lot of people felt like Dow just took too many steps. Your thoughts on the where does the fickle finger of blame go in that scenario?
I thought it was a failure in about three different areas personally. And I know I'll say this. I said it here on the channel too afterward. Kalen was ready, wasn't he? In the post game, when it came time to sort of point to things that weren't whole or where they were lacking or were beat up, he was on that. Yeah, I mean, I get that where LT Overton is concerned, but it's the 13th game of the season. So for 3.5 months at least, you've been repping up depth, his backup. Right. It shouldn't be an issue. Right. I know it's a different guy and that can present a problem, but this wasn't week one. And you lost a guy mid-game. You knew you were without LT Overton pretty much all week. Sure. So this wasn't even an in-game situation that caught you. So it's kind of an indictment of the coaching staff in some ways, too, that the job didn't get done. I thought the snap wasn't great. I think Dowd is slow on occasion getting the ball out. So kind of the imperfect storm there. And it was. I mean, it was absolutely a big momentum shift towards Georgia, because you kind of swapping punts, you know, early, right. But it felt like Oklahoma in some ways again, short fields, whether it was related to offensive mistakes, kicking game shortcomings. And you knew that's again, with this Georgia team, something you can't afford to do.
No, it was a big way to get it started for Georgia to get their first touchdown on the board. As it turned out, only three of Georgia's four touchdowns came off. One of them, of course, comes off a block punt. One of them comes off an interception. The other one comes off a turnover on downs when they got the shortest field. They got the whole game. Mm-hmm. So It was the Alabama defense, which makes it a good time for us to kind of turn to the Alabama defense, which was put in some bad spots, as it has been for much of the second half of the season. Travis, they didn't play great, but I thought for the spot they were put in, the way Alabama was only able to hold the ball for 23 minutes in terms of time of possession, I thought Alabama's defense played better than 28 points said they played, put it that way.
You know, it almost feels like last year at this time, doesn't it? Because the Alabama offense started to have the same type of struggles, maybe for different reasons. And the defense was solid, but you kind of wondered if it was more of the offense's ineptitude that was making the defense look better than it was really playing. It kind of felt that way Saturday for sure. And I do think the defense throughout the season has absolutely improved. I do believe that. It was tough with the short fields. I think Kane Womack would tell you, though, we got to be better than 0-for-4 in the red zone in terms of giving up touchdowns when we're put in that situation. If we're really an elite defense, and they had opportunities. I mean, that first touchdown pass, to Dylan Bell there in the middle of the field, who we talked about a good bit on the show last week. Yes. From Gunnar Stockton, that's where you missed an LT Overton. You know, I mean, you don't have him in there on third and long. You try to rush four, and, you know, a couple of your guys try to run a twist together, and it just falls apart before it ever gets going. So now you're really rushing two. Stockton had all day to sit in there and made a nice throw to Dylan Bell, but it started with certainly having plenty of time to do it.
Clear from listening to Kalen DeBoer, too, that along with the players that were on the injury report, there were a handful of guys not on the injury report who were pretty dinged up. And like you said, he was quick to point all that out. I think it was a message, Travis, from DeBoer to the committee.
Sure.
Hey, we'll look better in two. He even said it. We'll be a different team in 2 weeks. So I think that's part of why he went there in the post game. But one example, the snaps flip for Dejon Lee and Damani Jackson, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of came out of the blue when Damani Jackson ran out there to start and ended up playing about three quarters of the game at cornerback. It had kind of been the other way around for a while now with Dejon Lee. So something not right physically with Lee, presumably, but he was able to play a little bit. That's one example. Obviously, on the offensive line, things aren't quite right. Cam Dewberry didn't go. Dewberry, of course, was on the injury report. But it's a beat-up team. I think he said Daniel Hill is kind of beat up right now. So it's a team that came into the SEC title game definitely leaking some oil.
They did. You know, with Dejon Lee, I was wondering the same thing. Was it physically related or was it performance related against Auburn? Because he didn't have a great game against Auburn. His eyes weren't always great in that game in zone coverage. He compounded a missed tackle by Zay Mincy on that Malcolm Simmons big play there in the fourth quarter by not making a tackle of his own. Damani Jackson, give the guy credit, man. I'd pretty much given up on him a little bit. But the last couple of three games, I thought he played well against Georgia. You know, he came up and they put some shots on Nate Frazier, you know, early in the game. Give Frazier a lot of credit. That's a tough dude. Came back and played really well at the running back position. But, yeah, there's still some of that you're not always quite sure about. But absolutely, you know, and I'm sure the league office hears that from Kalen is thinking, well, why aren't these guys on the report, you know?
Right.
So it's a little bit of a line you gotta toe with all that, too, I'm sure.
Down goes Frazier, I was thinking, when Jackson hit that.
That was a big shot.
Nate Frazier, classic Howard Cosell call from Ali Frazier fight. Yeah, but Jackson had a bit. They did get Jackson on the first play of the game a little bit, kind of went right at him on the edge, and he wasn't quite able to make the stop trying to get that edge set over on, I guess it would have been Alabama's right side, Georgia's left side, but he did come back and make some nice plays, and that was good to see from him. Elsewhere around the defense, like you said, they definitely missed LT Overton. You had a limp off at one point with Justin Jefferson. So it was a It's kind of felt like a mass unit, but at this time of the year, like we say, Travis, they're all beat up. It's 13 games in.
I wanted to ask you, in terms of what we heard from Kalen with this mass unit of injuries, how did that line up today when we heard from Kalen about injuries?
Yeah,
he seemed very, very enthusiastic about guys, most of these guys being good to go in a first-round playoff game. Did you get that same sense today, though, after Alabama had been placed in the college football playoff? He wasn't in sell mode like he was yesterday.
You're right.
He's in what it is mode today. What did you take from those two?
Yeah, you're right. There was a little bit of a tone shift for DeBoer on that topic. You definitely get the feeling that Josh Cuevas is a bit of a long shot again for the first round of the playoffs. At least that's what I took from DeBoer today.
Yeah.
Now, he does sound highly encouraged that Jam Miller is going to be good to go. Did sound highly encouraged about Overton, which, of course, would be a big name for Alabama to get back. Dewberry, they're highly encouraged about him coming back and being fine. But not everybody, and Cuevas is a big one. We talked about this for weeks. They need him in that offense in a big way. Caleb Edwards, I thought, caught a few balls and looked pretty good, but he's not Cuevas, at least not at this point in his career.
No, I'm with you. I thought it was encouraging to see him kind of step up there later in the game. So they're going to need some carryover, because I took from DeBoer's comments today about Cuevas the same way you did, that, well, so much for that, or it's a very limited type of situation. The good news is you do have a little extra time, not a ton, but Marshall Pritchett, you can continue to sort of ramp up in that regard to go along with Caleb Edwards. And, you know, offensively, I just everyone's looking for magic right now, Chase. I don't know where it's going to come from as far as lighting the load for Ty Simpson, because that's the big problem. You know, it's the accumulation of what he has had to take on, I think, and the physicality as a big part of that is pretty much the central focus of that offense, without a crutch, without something else for this offense to go to. When you look at the teams that are in this college football playoff to go along with Alabama offensively, just like Indiana, Ohio State, man, they can turn, those quarterbacks are great, but they can turn and hand it to a running back, and they can lean on different things and take advantage of different things. If defenses overplay them in some aspect, they can make them pay because they're not one-dimensional. I don't know where this other dimension for the Alabama offense is going to come from in the next 10 days or so, Chase.
No, the obvious name that comes to mind is Brian Williams, right? One of the most electric athletes they've got on the roster. Been up and down all season, caught a couple of balls against Georgia where he turned fairly short throws into first downs and looked pretty darn good doing it in terms of the escapability. But here's the problem with that, Travis. At Ryan Williams' position of wide receiver, for him to make a big time impact in a game, he needs everything else in the offense to be working for him to end up with the ball, especially deep down the field. Quarterback's got to put it on the money, which isn't happening a whole lot right now, at least not often enough. The offensive line's got to block well enough for the quarterback to get that ball off. If you're not running the football, then you're going to have more two deep safeties, and you're going to have a tougher time getting open downfield. And so the difficulty, you know, in terms of athleticism, Williams is the guy you got to get the ball to as much as you possibly can against OU. But the problem is it's hard to do that when everything else going on in the offense is suffering from some level of dysfunction.
There's no doubt about it. I'm of the belief that early in the game against Oklahoma, and really I wanted to see it against Georgia, because Georgia almost dared Alabama early in the game to take shots, threw some one-on-one coverage at Ryan Williams and said, hey, here it is. Take your shots. Yeah. Alabama eventually got around to it.
Auburn did too.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma is going to do some of the same things.
Yeah.
And I think early in the game, I don't give a damn if they're in 3D. You got to max protect and try to double move it or something, you know, and throw the football down the field. And I'm not big throw the bomb guy, because that's always to me the kind of lazy response to offensive struggles. Well, you got to throw deep. You know, when I hear people say that, I'm like, well, not exactly probably much of a ball knower. But in this specific instance, I think early in the game, if you got to protect with eight and take a shot, to at least send a message early, and maybe more than once, you got to do it. But this sort of phone booth now that the passing game is trying to make it in, it's not happening. You see it. Opposing defenses are finally saying, look, you're not working the middle of the field like you did the first six games or so.
Right.
We're going to take away the middle of the field. And see if you can protect well enough to, without running the football, without the benefit of running the football to help you in protection, can you protect well enough to maybe have an opportunity to take some of those corner routes and some of those other things that some of these defenses seem to be daring Alabama to try to do?
Yeah, for me, throwing deep is important for Alabama, but the nuance there, I think your point is there's a lot of nuance in that suggestion, right? You got to do it situationally at smart times, right? Second and two, right? The second and short's always a good time to cut it loose deep if you feel like you can turn around and get the job done on third and short. Right after a turnover, a lot of times, good time to let it fly. Around midfield is a good time to let it fly. So situationally, you got to be ready to go. And sometimes the defense is going to comply, and sometimes it's not in terms of what they show. And that plays a factor in all of it too. But, you know, also if Williams is on the outside and Simpson recognizes one-on-one,
yeah,
you don't always need a ton of protection, because if you're sitting there in shotgun – and you know it's one-on-one and you can beat the safety help, you throw it up before the pass rush gets there, and at least know you're going to have a 50-50 ball with a guy in Ryan Williams whose ball judgment is fantastic. That's one of the best things he does, is high point the football deep down the field. He knows where that ball is going to end up. But again, it's not as easy as just telling Ryan Williams, hey, you're running the go route. Let's do this.
And they did that some in the second half. I thought Ty, again, put a nice throw on him there in the end zone. And to your point, we've seen Ryan go up and get balls in the past, maybe not as much this season. He's had some struggles with that, but that was one of those opportunities. And it didn't require five-step, seven-step drops or play action to do it. Because it seems like more defenses are willing to see if Alabama will take those shots.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I want to thank our listeners and viewers. Ask you to donate to Parker Covers Alabama, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents. You can contribute at parkercoversalabama.com. It's named in honor of Mike Parker. It's a new 501c3 that Crimson Cover has started here. Since about the beginning of football season, we're excited to launch that thing and see it go as far as it can. Again, it's parkercoversalabama.com if you would like to contribute. The Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, Travis, let's talk a little CFP before we get out of here. Alabama hangs on to that 9 spot. They don't even drop a whisker despite getting blown out by Georgia, taking on Oklahoma in Norman for that Friday night game on the 19th. Spoiled some plans of mine, but that's okay. I'm going to enjoy that Mike Cooley show vicariously through your attendance.
Yes, tonight. Caught Mike in Gainesville, Florida, of all places. Yeah, it was a good show. And if you can catch him in Huntsville, maybe a little bit later that weekend, I would definitely
gotta try.
Yeah. Interesting with that Friday night game. I didn't think Alabama Oklahoma would be Friday night. I thought it would be with Texas A&M and Miami on Saturday. I thought they would put one of the G5s on Friday night. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think they'd put two of them on Saturday. Two of the three games on Saturday are, you know, James Madison and Tulane. I didn't see that. But I understand it. You want to kind of crank it up with two brands.
Remind me what the night game is on Saturday.
It's not A&M. Miami's early on Saturday.
Okay. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
I want to say it's Oregon, James Madison.
Right. Yeah.
It's the late game. And then Tulane, Ole Miss is the sort of sandwich game on Saturday.
That's curious.
I didn't really see that coming, but yeah, there it is.
Friday night for Alabama, of course, Notre Dame not in the playoff and has declined a bowl invitation, Travis, along with some other schools. But Notre Dame definitely the most notable school to date that's declined a bowl invitation. But they're not the only ones. What is the non-playoff bowl going to look like in 5 years?
Here's part of the problem, man. You go from not making the playoff, it's the damn name of some of these bowls too. I mean, you missed the playoff and now you're going to the damn Pop-Tarts Bowl. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah.
And you're a proud program?
Yeah.
Come on. It's tough, man. With what the playoff is eating up with the bowl system now, you know, you're hoping you go to Orlando or Tampa, you know, for some semblance of dignity after a tough situation with the playoffs. So yeah, I mean, I won't miss Notre Dame not playing in a bowl game, but it is interesting to see if this continues to be a thing moving forward and how that impacts you know, this litany of bowls. You got to fill these games. Now you got 5-7 teams saying they're not going. You know, because their season's been over for a week or two. So,
and they've had a bunch of guys say, "I'm out of here in the portal already." Yeah, I'm sure.
They don't have players. So,
yeah,
interesting issue coming up here.
Whatever's left of the non-playoff bowl skyline is going to get stepped on too when the CFP goes to 16 teams and adds another tier to this playoff thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be a nightmare for the boys in those bowl jackets. Remember they used to love to come to the big games in those bowl jackets, Travis.
Yeah. You know, they
hug together about who they like and who they don't like and all that mess.
Go to heck crazy looking designs and colors on them. You know, look like they were working at a rental car stand in some of those Blazers. It's going to be fascinating to see how it evolves with the bowl system because of, you know, what could be a very real issue. And it goes back. It's a problem for ESPN because ESPN essentially owns the bowl system now. I mean, it's all about television. You know, I mean, they don't even care about ticket sales anymore. You know, they're just, it's all for television. So, you know, how does that impact ESPN, which already has a very, very large stake in all this stuff?
Were you of the firm belief that Alabama was in the playoff despite the route to Georgia, or did you think they might end up getting left off? I was pretty sure they were going.
My gut last night was they were probably out. So I was very surprised to see them. More so at 9. I wasn't surprised they got in. Just my gut was saying they might be out. I wasn't going to be surprised either way. I don't think Alabama has to apologize to anyone. I don't think, you know, that has to apologize. Notre Dame had a 3-game schedule. You know, had Miami, Texas A&M, and I guess USC you could throw in there. They went 1-2 against a 3-game schedule. So, you know, I didn't feel good about Alabama's chances last night, but at the same time, I didn't feel like, you know, relative to Notre Dame and Miami, if it was one of the two of those three that got one of those couple of spots that, you know, it needed to apologize for anything.
I could not. I think I wrote this today. I think Alabama's resume stood up just fine with the strength of schedule they went through. That you're right, they got nothing to apologize for. At the same time, I don't believe for a minute that the conference championship game factor does not weigh on the committee. I mean, you got four Power Four ADs in there, whose schools benefit from those conference championships.
Yes, they do, and they want to keep that money.
They want it, and the minute a Power Four team that would otherwise be qualified for the playoff gets ousted for losing a championship, a conference championship game.
Yeah.
You're going to see that tier just blow up. And I'm ready to see it blow out. I've been ready to see conference championship games disappear since the minute they went to a 12 team playoff, whatever, a year and a half, 2 years ago, whatever it was. So, I'm ready to see them disappear. But I think, and look, you saw it last year with SMU too, right? When it was SMU or Alabama, SMU lost the ACC title game. They didn't want to penalize them for losing that. Alabama kind of got the same favor to some extent this year.
They did.
So, but, you know, how long is the committee going to dance around that? Sooner or later, they might have to bounce somebody like in that kind
of scenario. Well, when they figure out they can make more money off of some other format than even the conference championships, that's how it'll have to be presented. You know, like, we may not do a conference championship game, but on that same weekend, we'll have multiple play-in games, perhaps involving your league. You'll have four teams playing two games instead of just two teams playing one game, and how that could impact things potentially from a financial perspective. But I think Lance right here has a comment about it being a G5 issue. This year it definitely is. I said that earlier today on the channel. You know, when you have two G5s in the field, you know, that's going to be rough. That was the issue with this time around for sure. You know, you got a 12 team field and you go two G5s for two of those spots.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to get left out for sure. And somebody that people would rather watch a good bit more, I think, than the G5s.
Miami in taking on A&M, Alabama getting Oklahoma. What are your thoughts in the 8-9 game? What are your thoughts about this Oklahoma matchup coming up in Norman on the 19th? Obviously, we'll hit a podcast before it starts where we'll delve into it a little bit more deeply. But just from 20,000 feet here, what do you think about that rematch?
I think, what is this Alabama offense going to look like? You know, what is the psyche of it going to be? What is the ability to take care of the football going to look like? Is it going to be this continuation now of turning the football over and also complicating issues, the kicking game not being what it needs to be? You know, that was the issue the first time around against Oklahoma. It was the issue against Georgia yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, don't take care of the football as well as you should, and the kicking game collapses in some form or fashion. So I don't think Oklahoma offensively is a tough prep at all. You know, I think Alabama defensively, even right now, looks at this matchup and goes, all right, we like this. Mm-hmm. You know, we had success against those guys last time around. We could be even healthier now. Part of the problem for Alabama's offense is that you expect Oklahoma to be healthier than they were when they came to Tuscaloosa. So, you know, I hate to put it so much on Ty Simpson, but I think that's the way it's going to be, because I'm not anticipating, you know, some type of ground game, some legitimate ground game coming to the surface. Alabama didn't run the ball poorly against Oklahoma for as much as it tried last time. But you know, it's still going to be a game in which Ty Simpson has to be really at the top form if Alabama's going to go on the road and win it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Alabama taking on OU for the second time this season. They did play well against them defensively last year. Got to take care of the ball. Special teams wise, Oklahoma's really good in that department. Yep. They're like Georgia when it comes to special teams. Hard to beat them in special teams. If you're Alabama at this point, I think you're doing well just to have a special teams draw.
Just don't get killed by your special teams. I've said that for about 3 or 4 weeks now about Alabama special teams. To your point, just if you can keep it pretty much even, you'll take that for sure.
All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast. For Travis Ryer of the Ryer on YouTube channel, I'm Chase Goodbread of the Tuscaloosa News, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Tide.